have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Down at the factory where I work, at every Christmas party we all go berserk. At the Christmas parties they serve free beer, and I'm still in the doghouse from the one last year. Running the switchboard is old Miss Lee. All through the year this old maid she ain't nice to me. But at the parties her eyes you snap, and I don't dare sit down cause she clamps on my lap. Our boss is old Lee Berger's son. All year long this old guy he don't have no fun. But at the parties he has a ball. She sings secretaries up and down the hall. We got a salesman who sings so loud, you hear his voice above the shouting of the crowd. He sings so loud at what he's pointed toward, he blows potato chips right off the smorgasbord. The boss starts the party off with a speech on goodwill. He says he loves us. Yeah, we are his pals. And when he's through talking, he shows what he means by trying to kiss all the gals. The men are all laughing and pouring out beer. I know some of these guys are delighted, because Christmas parties are used for the help, and their wives are never invited. Then we exchange silly presents, and the fat guys get girdles. They put them on and dance around and giggle. And when some of the girls open their presents, they scream, and their faces get red and they giggle. Old Miss Lee, who always jumps on my lap, she keeps following me around. And sometimes she tries to sit on my lap, and I ain't even sitting down. Mr. Hanson, the salesman, he never stops singing. All evening his loud voice is blaring. He stands by the smorgasbord shouting Silent Night, with his mouth full of pickle herring. The boss chases Miss Svensson around the water cooler. She's the one we call Jane Russell for short. All the fellows hope the boss don't ever catch her, because watching her run is great sport. I always start to go home around midnight, but I never get home until 4. A little woman comes out on the porch to meet me. Holy Moses, his dreamboat sore. She whoops and hollers about the lipstick on my face. I always feel like a dime. But I never miss the Christmas party at the office, cause we sure have a dandy good time. Now this year, if you plan to celebrate, be careful of that lipstick and don't get home late. And while your gang is having fun, I'd like to just say Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Tonight, we have two gems from the days when radio was king and their Christmas-themed stories. I'm sure you'll enjoy them. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com and I'll be sure and answer you. Merry Christmas again. Just a Happy New Year. Enjoy the shows. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Candy, over here.
What? Why, Myra Fisher, what are you doing here in a department store with your work clothes on?
I work here, dear. I'm a wage slave.
Well, I must say on you, it looks good. What do you slave at?
I'm head of advertising and promotion.
Well, quite a spot, hey, girl?
Well, it was until this morning.
Oh?
Now my neck is in the fire.
What'd you do? Forget to proofread one of your ads?
Nothing so trivial, dear, believe me. But am I glad to have bumped into you?
Maybe you'll change your mind when I tell you I've been shoplifting.
No, I'm serious, Candy. Could you spare a moment and come on up to my office?
Why, sure. And wipe that frown from off your brow. It's wrinkling your makeup.
Well, yours would wrinkle, too, if you had a missing Santa Claus helper on your hands.
I ran into a deal where we had a missing Santa Claus helper, Jack Frost. The gent with the icicles was supposed to talk to the tiny tots at the Brownstone, one of San Francisco's larger and classier department stores. I'd gone down there that afternoon shopping. I wanted a bow tie for my old pal Inspector Ray Mallard of the San Francisco Police Department. A bow tie that lit up and spelled Cossack when you pressed the button on the battery. That was when I bumped into this gal, Myra Fisher. We went up to her office on the sixth floor and she sat me down. Cigaretted me, too.
You think I'm fooling about this Jack Frost thing, don't you, Candy?
Well, now, look, dear, we all have our little peccadilloes. Yours just merely happens to be a missing Jack Frost. You'll get over it.
I refrain from hurling this ashtray at you, Candy, only because of our long acquaintance.
Good.
Now listen to me. We've had a Santa Claus helper here for almost a month, and a darn good one. The kids were crazy about him. This morning, he didn't show.
You don't suppose Jackie boy got in the mood and caught the Christmas spirit, do you? The kind that comes in pints?
No, he wasn't that sort of Joe.
Well, your answer's simple. Hire a new one.
They're hired through an agency. I called the one we do business with, and they're fresh out of Jack Frost. And I've got to get one, Candy. Otherwise, I come down 10 notches in the opinion of the brass.
I don't want you to think I'm unsympathetic, Myra, but what can I do?
Well, you get around, you know people. Find me somebody, anybody, who'll take over the job of being Jack Frost.
Well, okay. I'll do the best I can, Myra.
Candy, you're a deer.
Yeah, one of Santa's deers. Okay, I'll try and find you a Jack Frost, Myra, but don't hold it against me if he turns out to look more like Humpty Dumpty. I went home and looked up the Webster definition of soft. It said soft, easily yielding to pressure. That was me, Candy Matson, girl dope. Here I had all my Christmas shopping to do, and I agreed to find a substitute for Jack Frost. I had no idea where to start, so I changed into something red and green for a stop and go, also for Christmas, and went over to see my friendly advisor, Rembrandt Watson. Rembrandt is a photographer, and excellent, too, now that he doesn't have the Sherry Shivers or the Port Palsies. He lives on California Street, just kitten rompers from Old St. Mary's, with a statue of Sun Yat-sen for company in a park next door.
Candy doll, how delightful. Do come in, won't you?
Thanks, Rembrandt.
Oh, Pat, you're acquainted with my friend Diogenes Murphy, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Hello again, Mr. Murphy.
Well, good afternoon, lad. You look prettier than either the last time I saw you.
Uh-oh, here comes the blarney.
Young lady, Diogenes Murphy, the honest Irishman, never says a word he doesn't mean. Now, how do you think I managed to sell so many used cars at my place out on Venice Avenue? Huh?
Because you're an honest Irishman.
Oh, you're so right, lad. Incidentally, if you need a good car, I can get you one at a very reasonable...
Diogenes?
Oh, sorry, I got carried away.
I didn't mean to barge in on you like this, Rembrandt.
Well, don't be ridiculous, dear.
No, don't be. Think nothing of it, lad. I'm on my way now. Rembrandt and I were only discussing the situation of the world.
And to what conclusion did you come?
It stinks. The bottom of the afternoon to the both of you.
Oh, he's quite a boy.
Yes, I'm very fond of Diogenes. What brings you around this way, dear?
Jack Frost.
Yes. Now, getting on with our conversation, what brings you around this way, dear?
Jack Frost.
Maybe the needle's bad. Shall we try again?
I know how you feel. I reacted the same way myself. I'll give you the pocket-sized edition. The Brownstone department store is without a Santa Claus helper, Jack Frost. He didn't show up for work this morning. I said I'd find him a new one.
Well, that's very sweet of you, Dove.
Very dumb of me, Dove. I know of only one character who even remotely looks like Jack Frost. I met him up in Alaska when I was traveling with the USO.
Won't do you much good down here, will it?
No. That's why I came to see you, Rembrandt. Don't you keep a cross file on models you've used in photography?
As a matter of fact, I do. Here in this little book. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Men, thin, extremely. I have just one, Pietro Tarantello. Would you care for a Sicilian Jack Frost?
In Sicily, yes. Hey, what's that?
Where?
On that chair next to you.
Oh, that's the afternoon paper, dear. Diogenes left it, I imagine.
Yes, but on the front page. Here's the whole story about the missing Jack Frost on the front page. Ooh, what he got in his Christmas stocking. A slug through the head.
That's no way to treat Jack Frost.
And here's a picture of the guy without his false icicles.
What the ham? Looks like he stepped right out of an 1890 Shakespearean play.
I hate to say this, Rembrandt, but he resembles you.
I take back what I said.
Rembrandt.
Divorce yourself from that tone of voice, Candy. I don't like it.
Rembrandt, I've got an idea.
You usually do.
You like little children.
Can't stand them.
You like to talk to people.
I abhor conversation.
You like to be charming.
Lost me charm.
Gay.
Lost me gay.
With the help of a few icicles, Ducky, you're going to be Jack Frost. Rembrandt fought. He argued. He paced the floor. He had the vapors. He fainted. I brought him to. I won the argument. I got my friend Myra Fisher on the phone and informed her that one R. Watson would assume the role of Jolly Jack Frost on the morrow. She was delighted. I couldn't say the same for Rembrandt. Then I went home. I was greeted by a sound very much like that of a phone ringing. Using my keen instincts, I figured it was the phone. It was. Hello, Candy Matson.
How do you do, Miss Matson? Allow me to introduce myself.
Aloud.
My name is Burke, Prentice Burke. I'm the first assistant vice president of the Brownstone.
Brownstone? Yes, that's a store of some kind, isn't it?
Yes. Now, the reason for my call. There has been, shall I say, a rather unfortunate occurrence in our store today.
So I read.
I need the help of a professional sleuth. You were highly recommended by the head of our advertising department, Miss Myra Fisher.
Uh-huh. The thick glutton.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, no need to. You didn't do anything. Okay, care to talk to me now, Mr. Burke?
Oh, I'd much rather have you come down to my office, Miss Batson. This matter is of an extremely confidential nature.
I'm your girl, then, figuratively speaking. How long will you be there?
As long as necessary. That's up to you.
Very well. I'll be there in half an hour, if I can find a place to park. I only had time for a fast change, so I made it from Andiscray to Taboo. I sniffed at it and felt I was on the right scent. Then I climbed in my car, drove down Kearney Street, waved a crisp single under the nose of a hotel doorman, and had my car taken care of. Then into the Brownstone and up to Mr. Prentice Burke's office. I flipped a hip past the girl's secretary and walked on in. Burke was waiting for me, that was obvious. I could tell by the expression on his face. It was worried look number 12B. How do you do, Mr. Burke? I'm Candy Matson.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you. Now, our subject is what?
A man named Jordan.
That's on another network.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, that's all right. Now, about this Jordan.
Ralph Jordan, to be exact.
Well, that's a relief. For a moment, I thought you wanted to talk about Jack Frost.
That's just it. He was Jack Frost.
Uh-oh. Me and my big mouth.
He was working here up until yesterday afternoon. Maybe you read about it. He was found shot today.
Yes, I read about it.
That's the reason I've called you.
Why didn't you have your own store detectives take over, Mr. Burke?
No. That would never do. I want no one in the store to know what's going on.
Ah, intrigue.
Quite possibly. I have reason to suspect that Jordan was killed by someone in our employ. I want to find out who that someone was before the police do and get it splashed all over the front pages.
Publicity, can't you say?
Business has been off all year, and any bad breaks in the press would hurt us that much more.
Maybe you've got a point there, I don't know.
I know I have.
Okay, I'll take the job. You say you have a suspicion. What is it?
Well, nothing tangible. It's just a feeling I have.
Oh, that's a big help. Well, I'll mush around and see what I can pick up. I'll bill you tomorrow for my first day's work. It's much easier to sustain a friendship on a daily basis. I left Burke looking as though someone had just called his store a bazaar. It was closing time, so I hefted my way through the crush and retrieved my car from the doorman. The Hall of Justice is right on my way home, so I decided to drop in on my old pal Mallard, Inspector Ray Mallard of San Francisco Homicide. A nice guy to serve coffee to on Sunday mornings if you could ever lasso him. I never could get strong enough rope.
Candy, what brings you around here?
I hate to have my Christmas ruined so early. What about that Jack Frost character?
Oh, yeah. Poor guy got it good.
Where'd you find him?
In his apartment over on 17th. He lived near Seal Stadium. Why so interested, Candy?
Rembrandt's a dead ringer for the guy.
I still don't get that.
The gal who's head of advertising for the Brownstone was going out of her head for another Jack Frost. I talked Rembrandt into taking the job. Does sound funny, doesn't it? Bring me up to date, Mallard. Did you get any dope on the killing?
Nothing but a .45 slug out of the guy's wall. Ballistics is checking it now.
Nothing else?
If I did, I should tell you.
No. Oh, I guess not.
This goes beyond just a normal curiosity, Candy. What are you drilling for?
Oh, it's only that I'm worried about Rembrandt. I got him the job. I'm responsible. I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Ask a silly question, Mallard, and you get a silly answer. Okay, let's forget it. How's about dinner tonight?
I've fought this thing long enough. Okay.
Candy.
Yes, Ellie.
We've known each other a good long time, haven't we?
That's right. Ever since the fair on Treasure Island.
We've had our little quarrels, little misunderstandings.
Oh, but they never seem to last long, though, do they?
No. That's why I feel I have every right to ask you a question.
Why, yes, I'd say you do, Mallard.
Maybe I'll ask you tonight.
No, go ahead. Now's as good a time as any.
Perhaps it is, Candy. You get around a lot. You meet people. Do you know where I can get a couple of tickets to the Rose Bowl game?
My brain lit up like a Roman candle. I stormed for the door, turned back, stood there, my jaw waggling helplessly. Then I stuck my tongue out at Mallard and left. It was the only thing I could think of doing. Oh, he can make me so mad. But inside half an hour after I got home, I started to laugh. Felt much better. Just as I was puttering around getting ready, the apartment buzzer buzzed. That Mallard, much too early. But I was wrong. It wasn't Mallard. Well, Myra, what a surprise. Do come in, won't you?
No, thanks, Candy. A friend of mine's waiting in his car outside. He's driving me home.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't stay for a moment?
So, my dear, I just dropped by to leave this. Merely a little token of thanks for getting me off the hook.
Oh, Myra, there wasn't any need to do that.
Just a few pair of old stockings, dear. Getting me my new Jack Frost means more than you know. Here, please take them, along with my very deepest thanks.
Thanks so much. A girl can always use them. Are you all set with my friend, Mr. Watson?
Oh, yes. He came in this afternoon and filled out his withholding tax and so on. Very nice.
I think you'll find him very efficient, Myra.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Pardon me. I didn't mean to frighten you.
Oh, Mallard. Oh,
silly of me. I must have jumped a foot.
Oh, that's all right. He frightens me, too. Myra, I'd like to have you meet Inspector Mallard. Inspector, Miss Fisher.
How do you do?
Oh, fine, thank you. Now that I've caught my breath. Do forgive me, Candy, but I must rush. See you soon, I hope.
Tomorrow, Myra, I'll be down to see how my lad's doing as Jack Frost. Thanks for the stockings.
Well, aren't you going to invite me in?
No, I'm not. Here's my coat right here. What's our hurry? Come on, let's go. I'm starved.
I thought we could have a cocktail here before we left.
You thought wrong. 2 tickets to the Rose Bowl. From now on, you earn your cocktails, Mallard. We went downstairs, and as I locked the front door, a car was just driving off. It was Myra, and she waved. And driving, if these tired old eyes hadn't deceived me, was Mr. Prentice Burke, vice president of the Brownstone. Well. Oh, well. Mallard and I climbed into our car and drove out to the Cliff House. It was that kind of an evening. We had dinner, and after, I suggested we walk a bit. The night was crisp and clear, and the evening star was hanging out above the dark waters of the Pacific like an iridescent Japanese lantern. We cut across a little road above Sutro Baths, where an old car barn had once stood, and worked our way over the cliffs and stood high above Land's End. It was exhilarating.
Penny for your thoughts, Candy.
Inflation is still here.
All right, I get 2 pennies.
Well, I was just thinking, Mallard, dear, when you see a star in the sky, soft water below, feel Christmas in the air, how can there be violence in the world?
An age-old question, pal. One I can't answer. I'm too small. Hey, you're cold. I'd better put my arm around you.
Mallard, no.
What's the matter?
The headlights from that automobile are shining right down on us. Mallard.
Candy, what's wrong?
Got your flashlight with you?
Sure. Also, my gun and my handcuffs. Anything else we need? A mortar, maybe?
The lights from that car. They shone on something. Down there, under that tree.
Oh, Candy, just for once, can't you stop digging up a mystery? Be human?
I am being human. Come on, Mallard. I want to see what's under that tree. We scrambled around through the brush, slipped into some sliding sand, and rode the crest down to the tree. It wasn't easy to get around some of those brambles, but get there I fully intended doing, because what I saw was red, bright red.
You okay, Candy?
Nothing that a new pair of nylons won't fix. Shoot the flashlight over this way a bit, Mallard. There. That's it. Now, Do you think I'm dreaming things up?
What is it?
Wait, I hold it up.
Well, looks like some kind of a costume.
Right. And look, if those aren't bloodstains, I'm a Labrador Retriever.
No, you're Candy Matson. Those are bloodstains.
How was your boy dressed when you found him?
Torn slacks, sweater, shoes, no socks.
This was most likely his costume, then.
Yeah. Don't move around too much, Candy. I want to have a good look at the ground.
Hey, what are you doing down there?
Who's that?
The police. Now get up here and don't try any tricks.
That's all right, officer. This is Inspector Mallard. Homicide.
Oh, sorry, Inspector.
That's all right. Stay right where you are. We'll be right up.
Now, this is a break, Candy. I want you to drive me to a phone. I'll leave the officer here to guard the place. You can go home. I've got work to do here, okay?
Yeah, sure. For once, we had dinner before you had a chance to break the date. This baby was hard to reconstruct. Was the guy knocked off out there at Land's End, or was he bumped off at his apartment, the killer driving way out to the beach and hiding the costume? Only time would tell. I went home, climbed into bed, and logged about 8 hours, enough to give me fuel for the next day. In the morning, I went down to the brownstone. The shoppers were already swarming through the place. I spotted a floor walker and strolled over to him. Pardon me, sir. I said, pardon me, sir.
I'm very busy, young lady. Make it as brief as possible.
You do work here, don't you?
Of course.
You are the floor walker assigned to this section?
That is correct. Come to the point, please.
Well, I've a good mind to report you.
As you wish. As I said, I'm very busy. Now, what is it you wanted to know?
The words are like gall in my mouth now, but where do I find Jack Frost?
Right over there, in the back, 2 aisles over.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Very much. Of all the high-handed characters, people like that make me steam. I was getting up a full head of dander, but it simmered out before I had a chance to boil over. Because as I rounded a corner, I saw Frosty Boy, or Rembrandt if you choose, up on his platform with the cutest little blonde kid sitting in his lap.
Well, well, well. Look who we have here. A great big boy. Hello there, son.
Hello, Jack Frost.
What is your name?
Topper.
Topper. My, what a fine name. How old are you, Topper?
5 and a half.
5 and a half. Well, you must go to school, Topper. Which one?
Garfield.
Garfield. That's a good school. Now, tell me, what would you like to have me tell Santa Claus to bring you for Christmas, Topper?
An electric train and a baseball bat, and I'd like to be in the seals for Lefty O'Doul.
Well, I'll see what I can do to arrange that, Topper. I'll tell Santa Claus. Bye now.
Goodbye, and thank you, and Merry Christmas.
I hope you can make the boy's wish come true. O'Doul could use him.
Candy, I'm so glad you're here, Dove. Duck around into the back room for a moment. I've got to talk to you.
Aren't you working, Frosty Boy?
I got 10 minutes off every hour. I'll take the break now. Right around there, Candy.
Okay, I'll see you in a moment. What's the matter, Rembrandt? Even under those icicles, you look warm under the collar.
Here, look at this. Every now and then, one of these moppets toddles up to me with a Christmas letter in its hand. A little red-headed girl handed me this about half an hour ago. I've been shaking ever since.
Let me see. Dear Jack Frost, a word to the wise is sufficient. When you take your lunch hour, keep on going. Don't come back. Otherwise, you'll meet the same fate as your predecessor. Just about what I expected.
Candy. You mean to say that you're deliberately using me as a sacrificial lamb?
By no means, Ducky. Go ahead, take your lunch. Then do as the note says. Keep on going. As a matter of fact, why don't you take off now? I'll meet you at your place in about an hour.
That's the best news I've heard since Nelson's victory at Trafalgar.
I whipped upstairs, reported to Prentice Burke, got my first day's check, and on my way out told his secretary she'd better get Burke some smelling salts. Then I went back down on the floor again. Sure enough, there was my boy, the floor walker. I wanted to have a few more words with him.
Oh, you again.
If you don't mind. I was just up to see Miss Myra Fisher. She wasn't in. Have you seen her down here?
No, and what's more, I won't see her all day. She phoned saying she was feeling ill. Most inconsiderate, I must say, during the holiday rush.
Yes, I must say. Could you give me her address? She's a friend of mine. I've got to see her.
Her address? Well, yes. I write it down here on one of my cards for you.
Myra Fisher, 227F Union Street. There.
Thank you. You're so kind. I had all the ammunition I wanted. A check signed by Burke and a card written by the floorwalker. His name was Simon Liggett. With that, I ducked into a phone booth and called Mallard.
Homicide, Mallard speaking.
Good boy. This is Candy. What did you find out at Land's End last night?
A couple of very juicy footprints. They give us nothing.
Did you make any casts of them?
Why, sure.
Mind if I borrow a couple of them for a few hours, Mallard?
Well, I don't see how it'll hurt. Sure, okay.
Thanks, Mallard, dear. I'll be by in a moment. And I want to borrow you, too. I stopped by the Hall of Justice, got the cast of the footprints, shoved Mallard into the car, and then picked up Rembrandt. The thing was only a hunch, but my hunches have paid off, so I never ignore them. First, we went out to an address on Fifth Avenue near Clement. We got in the back door and went to work. Nothing made sense there. So we drove over to Reseda Way in the marina. Again, we got in and did some sleuthing. This time, we hit the jackpot. A pair of shoes in the closet matched the casts we had brought with us. Rembrandt, go out in the kitchen and see if this place has any ketchup.
I'm not hungry, Dub, but I'll look.
What are you up to, Candy? We've got enough to swing a case here.
I'm working for a voluntary confession, Mallard. Tell me, what was the position that the Jack Frost was in when you found him dead?
In a chair, like that one. His head slumped down on his chest.
Good.
Here's the concept, Dub. When are you putting it on?
You.
What?
Without the bun or relish, Ducky. Sit down there, will you, Rembrandt? Now, just go limp and let your head hang down. That's it. Now for a little seasoning.
Oh, Candy, you're smearing me with this sticky stuff.
And all for the sake of art. Hold still. There. How does he look, Mallard?
Why, all the... Candy, it looks like the same guy, the real thing.
Good. Now, Rembrandt, you just sit like that. Don't move. Mallard, you duck into that closet over there and I'll hide in here. We've got a good view of the front door from both places. Okay?
Okay. There are times, Candy, when I admit I admire your genius.
Genius, schmenius. Come on, let's hide. The golden shafts of sun splashing in through the window from the ocean slowly turned pink, then purple, and into twilight. The minute ticked on. Once... Bless you, but quiet, though, Rembrandt. You'll mess up your ketchup. 5 minutes. 10. Then we heard muffled footsteps coming down the hall and a key inserted in the lock of the apartment door.
No! Oh, no! It can't be! The old fool I killed! No, no!
Okay, buddy, that'll be about enough.
Oh, no.
Get him, Mallard. He's ducking.
I'll get him. Oh, no.
Nice tackle, Mallard.
All right, Mac. You going to remain peaceful, or do I have to give you a little tap?
No, no. I'll be quiet. You got me. I did it. I did it to both of them. I killed them. I killed them. I killed both of them.
Both of them?
Yeah. Look behind the sofa. The sofa. The girl. Jack Frost, the sofa.
The sofa. Wait a minute, Mallard.
I had to do it. I couldn't. Oh. But then they were going to do it.
Oh, Mallard.
More trouble, Candy?
I killed both of them. I'm glad I killed.
Yes. An old friend of mine. The late Myra Fisher. The whole thing was jealousy. Not the jealousy of a man for a woman, but the jealousy of a man for a job. Simon Liggett had been with the Brownstone for almost 20 years. He'd worked himself up from the stock boy to a place where he'd been promised the job of head of advertising and promotion. He almost got it, except at the last moment, Prentice Burke gave the position to Myra Fisher. That had only been 2 weeks before. He knew that Myra was on a probationary term, so he did everything he could to undermine her. Little things like changing ad copy, sending out false stories to newspapers. He figured that if he could keep the store without a Santa Claus helper, he'd break Myra's back and get the job by the first of the year. He paid a visit to the first Jack Frost and tried to bribe him into quitting. but the guy would have none of it. There was a struggle. Liggett lost his head and whipped out a gun and shot him. He was still in his costume, so Liggett stripped him, put some old clothes on him, drove out to Land's End, and ditched his costume. Then he felt sure there would be no Jack Frost the next day. But that's when Myra met me, and I talked Rembrandt into taking over. By this time, Liggett was in a frenzy and would stop at nothing. He trailed Myra and Burke to Myra's home, killed her, took her body over to his place, and ditched it behind the sofa. The next morning, he wrote a note to Rembrandt and gave it to one of the little girls waiting in line to see him. Fear and envy were taking their toll on the poor guy's mind. I wanted to compare the handwriting, so I had Burke write me a check and Liggett write Myra's address on a card. Also, we had the footprint cast. Between the two, everything pointed toward Liggett. That's when I staged my little parlor charade with Rembrandt playing the part of a corpse. The sight, with Rembrandt's resemblance to the dead Jack Frost, would shatter anybody into a confession. But Christmas, in spite of everything, is a lovely time of year. And there is a Santa Claus. Three of them for me, as a matter of fact. Mr. Prentice Burke, who sent me a very nice check for my efforts. Rembrandt Watson, who, out of sheer love for the job, went back to playing Jack Frost for all the kids at the Brownstone. And last but not least, Inspector Ray Mallard. He gave me a Christmas sock right on my mouth, just where any well-placed Christmas sock should go.
The Christmas bells are ringing, the holly's at the window pane. I hear the children singing, it's Christmas again.
And now the Whistler's strange story, Delayed Christmas Present.
Christmas was really over, for it was 1 o'clock in the morning at Pete's Cantina, a tough little night spot on the outskirts of Panama City. But the melody lingered on. You could hear the chimes of the big church a block away playing Adeste Fidelis. There was practically no business. Four hostesses, all Americans, were sitting drearily at the far end of the ballroom near the bar. One of them, Mary Winslow, billed as Candy Porter, just sat gazing drearily into space, thinking bitterly of a past from which for a while there had seemed no escape. But for 5 months now, she'd been relatively safe. No one had been around asking any questions. As Candy Porter, blues singer, Mary Winslow had found a kind of security, not a happy security, for she was far away from home. And as the chimes became silent, Mary wondered if it was worthwhile. Her reverie was broken up as she looked up and saw Pete, a fat, greedy owner of the cantina, approaching her table.
Candy, Candy, look, there's an American gentleman just came in. He wants to buy you some champagne. Champagne,
oh,
you hear
please,
that?
Please, Pete, not tonight. It's Christmas. I'd rather be alone if you don't mind.
I do mind. Look.
All right. Let him spend his money on champagne.
Now you're smart, baby. Here he comes.
You turn, see the tall, heavy-set American approach. Suddenly you become tense. You recognize the type, don't you? After a year of running away, you've learned to spot his kind in a moment. You fight to remain calm as he reaches your table.
Sit down, Mr. Fontaine. Sit down.
Sure you don't mind, Miss Porter?
Of course not.
Thanks. In that case, I guess I will.
I'll go get the champagne. I keep him on ice. 11 years old, too.
Cigarette, Mr. Fontaine?
No, thanks.
You don't mind if I do?
Of course not. Light?
Thanks.
Strange, spending Christmas so far away from home.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Business. Important business.
Couldn't it wait?
No. This business means a lot to the people I work for.
Well, here's what you say, bubble water. From Marseille, 13 years old.
You said 11.
That was from La Havre. This is even better. Now I put him back in the ice. You want some more? you just call Pete. I got another one on ice, just like you.
Well, I guess it's kind of late to wish you a Merry Christmas, Miss Porter. So I guess I'd better just say season's greeting. Hmm? Anyway, here's luck.
Here's hoping you find whatever you came here after.
I've already found what I came after.
I'm glad.
I hope you will be.
Why shouldn't I be?
Because I came after you, Mary Winslow.
After a year, it doesn't seem fair, does it, Mary Winslow? After a year of hiding, using one name and then another. After 5 bitter months of singing at Pete's Cantina as Candy Porter, blues singer, this man Fontaine has come to take you back to the States, to face the consequences of one horrible night. You're sure he's a detective. He couldn't be anything else. You can't run again. There's no place you could go. You've only one card left. And as you face the man across the table and listen to his even, level voice, you decide to play it. If you play it carefully, it might be an ace.
I think you know why I'm here. We're leaving in the morning for Los Angeles, Miss Winslow.
Like the billing says, my name is Candy Porter.
I know what the billing says. I know what it said in Brooklyn when you were billed as Doris Trent, in Denver when you were billed as Gladys James. But when you first took a powder out of Los Angeles, you were Mary Winslow.
You know, it's almost funny you should call me Mary Winslow. We used to work together, her and me, in the same floor show. We could have been billed as twin sisters. The customers used to mistake us for each other, too.
Now, look, Miss Winslow, let's quit kidding.
I'm not kidding. A lot of other people have made the same mistake you have. And like I said, I knew Mary Winslow intimately. I think I could help you solve your case if you let me tell you about her.
Sure. Go ahead, if it'll make you feel any better.
Thanks. You see, Mary Winslow was really just a good kid that got a bad break. In love with this swell guy and scared to death of a hoodlum. She told me all about it. It's quite a story.
I'll bet it is.
Yes, it was quite a story, wasn't it, Mary? And it all began a year ago Christmas Eve at the Christmas party given by your employers in the pink room of the Swank Wilchester Hotel. You really enjoyed yourself that night, didn't you? And you were quite the hit of the evening. You sang 3 numbers and went over big. Your fellow workers didn't know your many talents. Everyone told you what a fine singer you were. And when you left, you were feeling good. So good, you decided to drop into the cocktail lounge, make a phone call, and have a nightcap before going home.
Scotch and soda, mix it.
Make mine the same, Bill. Gotcha. I heard you sing tonight. You were terrific.
Thanks.
What's the matter? Did he stand you up?
Who?
The guy we just talked to on the phone. No, I guess he didn't stand you.
Didn't he?
And he's on his way here right now. Yep, that's the answer. Lucky guy.
Hey, I suppose.
Oh, take it out of here, Bill.
Now, look here, Mr.
Oh, take it easy. It's practically Christmas. What's the harm of my buying you one drink? Like I said, I like your voice, Miss Winslow.
Here's your change.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
You must be a detective. You know my name and everything.
No, not everything. But it wasn't any trick to find out your name. I just asked one of the boys who you're dancing with. My name's Joe Clark. Oh, I see you've never heard of me.
Should I have?
A lot of people have. Most of the boys and girls around the night spots know me.
Well, then that accounts for my ignorance. You see, I seldom haunt the night spots.
Well, you should. With a voice like yours, you could be packing them in a good nightclub.
Oh, now I get it. You're a professional talent scout and you want to get me into the movies.
No. I'm a gambler. Shocking?
Why should it? Live and let live is my motto. And that's exactly what I'm going to do right now.
What?
Live my life and let you live yours. Good night, Mr. Clark. My. Just think, tomorrow I can tell all the girls at the office I met a real live gambler.
You could tell them all a lot more than that if you believed in your voice as much as I do.
Really?
Yeah. You've heard of Dominguez on Sunset, out near the ocean?
It's an undercover gambling club, isn't it?
It's more than a gambling club. It's a swell floor show. A lot of big people go out there, people that count.
And they're all intimate friends of yours, I'm sure.
Not all, but I know quite a few. Could push you right to the top with that voice.
Oh, that's the oldest line I've ever heard.
It's not a line. Yeah, but skip it. Go on home. Listen to the radio. Eat candy. You can have a terrific time. You go to Dominguez with me, you can't tell what might happen. You might have to meet a couple of show producers. So play it safe and go home. It may be dull, but you'll always get the work on time.
Is that all you have to say?
That's all. Nighty-night.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Could we be back fairly early?
Leave any time you say.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Oh, now you're making sense. I'll call a cab.
Never mind. I have a car. It's parked right around the corner.
Clark used just the right approach to female. You realize you're being a fool. But as the hours pass, you tell yourself your fears are groundless. Joe treats you with perfect courtesy. You watch the gambling for a while, then proceed to the silver room and enjoy the floor show. Afterward, you have a little food and watch the dancers. Suddenly, you've had enough.
Joe, do you mind if we leave now?
I said we'd leave any time you said. What is it? The music?
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Another guy?
Another guy. My fiancé.
What happened to him?
He's in the Philippines. Research.
Oh, chemist?
Doctor. Dr. Frank Wilson, M.D. That was his car we drove out here in. He told me to keep it warm for him.
Well, too bad. We could have had a lot of fun. Well, shall we go?
Was it just the song, Mary? Or was it that uneasy feeling you have about Joe that made you want to leave so suddenly? It must have been the song. For as you're ready to leave the club grounds, Joe is still a considerate escort.
Well, hop in. Oh, unless you want me to drive.
I'll drive, unless you mind too much.
Oh, no, I don't mind. Probably be safer, too.
For several miles, Joe says little, seems preoccupied. And you feel relieved when he breaks his rather strange silence.
Oh, say, Mary, would you mind stopping for a minute to drive in? All of a sudden, I'm having an awful headache. Maybe I can get some aspirin.
I doubt it, but we'll give it a try.
You can keep the motor running while I'm gone. I've only been gone a few seconds.
Okay. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Joe!
Get going.
Joe, you shot him.
My head got going fast. There's a gun in your ribs, baby. You just saw what happened to one guy that crossed me.
Is he dead?
I don't know.
Oh, you. Oh, why was I such a fool?
Turn right at the next corner. Car's been tailing us for the last 5 minutes.
I'm glad. I hope it's a prowl car to save me the trouble of phoning the police.
He didn't turn, baby. You shouldn't have said what you did about phoning the cops. You better pull over and park. You got a couple of things to talk over. I said pull over! Better.
Please, Joe, don't kill me. I know you can do it easy, but I'll never talk about tonight.
That's the way you feel now. An hour from now, you'll feel
better. Oh, no, I won't. On my word of honor, I'm making a deal with you, Joe. I'm trading you my silence for my life. I swear I won't talk about it ever.
Okay, I'll take a chance. You drove the getaway car, so we're partners now anyway. We're going to have a lot of fun together, you and me. Now, how about dropping me off in my place?
Tell me where to go.
I live about...
After you drop Joe and you reach your apartment, you're so weak you can hardly stand. Your senses are reeling, your brain is spinning. You practically fall into bed. You try to snatch a little sleep, but sleep is impossible. Finally, at 6 o'clock in the morning, the newspaper is shoved under your apartment door. The headlines sicken you.
Drive-in operator shot and hold up, dies.
The subheadings are even worse.
Unidentified man and woman seen fleeing from scene of crime in dark green 47 model Chevrolet. Pedestrian believes he can identify both car and woman.
There it is, Mary. Hopeless, isn't it? Even if you called the police, your story would sound phony now. It's closing in on you, isn't it, Mary? Yet frightened as you are, you're certain of two things. That you're not going to become further involved with Joe Clark. And you won't allow any unfavorable publicity to fall on your absent fiancé, Dr. Frank Wilson. You were foolish to risk a life of happiness with him, weren't you? For a few moments of excitement with a gambler, a murderer like Joe Clark. But you decide there's only one thing you can do, Mary. Leave town, disappear, and never see Clark again. You dress hurriedly, packing only a few belongings, and then spend Christmas Day and night at the home of a girlfriend. The next morning, you're on an eastbound plane. 3 months later, you're singing in the Golden Lion, a prosperous little nightclub in Brooklyn, New York, where you become a featured performer under the name of Doris Trent. You're a great success under your new name. And then one night you have a visitor. You're sure it's Mr. Vern Shields, London musical comedy producer.
Come in.
Well, well, what do you know? Long time no see, Miss Trent. Doris Trent, it says on the program.
All right, Joe, now that you've found me, what's on your mind?
You double-crossed me, baby.
You're crazy. That's why I left town, so I wouldn't have to talk to anybody.
But you could still write, couldn't you?
I don't get you.
That anonymous note to the police, written just after you left, telling all about that driving job. Gave the exact time, my name, where I lived, what I had on, everything. But not a word about the girl with me. Funny, huh? You're the only one that knew all of that, baby.
Oh, no, Joe, you're wrong. Believe me, I didn't write any notes.
Couldn't have been anyone else. 2 days after you left, they picked me up for questions.
Anybody could have written a note like that. Well, one of your enemies might have wanted you out of circulation and tried to frame you.
Yeah, maybe, but I doubt it.
Joe, I didn't write it. I've kept my bargain with you 100%.
There's one way you can convince me.
How?
Marry me tonight.
Marry you?
Yeah. That way I'll be sure of you. Wives don't testify against their husbands. Besides, I'll know what you're doing all the time.
Oh, Joe, I gotta go to my show. Let's talk this over in the morning.
Tonight or else. You can run up to Connecticut. But go ahead, do your show. If you've got any ideas about calling in the cops, don't forget, you drove the getaway car. And in case anything serious should happen to me, there's a written confession in my pocket telling exactly how you helped me pull the job. How we used your boyfriend's car. How you kept the motor running waiting for me. Your doctor would love reading about that, wouldn't he?
No. No, he wouldn't.
And don't get funny. Go ahead and on to your show. I'll wait till you're here.
You start down the hallway toward the powder room off stage. Suddenly you realize what a fool you've been. But you're not going to keep on being a fool, are you, Mary? Not with that wall telephone just 5 steps ahead of you.
Operator. Oh, operator. Get me police headquarters.
Better
quick.
Hang up quick, babe, and I mean quick. You should have looked around before you called. I had a hunch you'd try to double-cross me. Now I know for sure who wrote that note to the cops.
Oh, I didn't, Joe.
You just tried to call him, didn't you? All of a sudden, I've lost interest in getting married. We're just going for a little ride. Come on, babe, start walking.
No, Joe. I'm not moving a foot, not an inch. If I have to be shot, I'll take it right here. Let go of my arm.
Hey, what's going on here? Something wrong, Doris? This guy bothering you?
Yes, he is. He wants to date me. Tell him to leave, will you, Eddie?
Maybe I'd better take him into the office and call the cops.
No. No, thanks, Eddie. There's no need for that. He's just another wolf. Tell him to leave. That's good enough.
You heard what the lady said, bud. Start traveling.
Okay, chum. Anything you say. I'll see the lady later. She parked right across the street.
You should have let me call the cops.
I would have if he hadn't had you covered with his gun.
Oh? Thanks, kid.
Eddie, I gotta get out of town fast.
After what you just did for me, that's a cinch. Grab some clothes while I phone my wife I'm bringing you home. We'll go out the rear entrance. My car's on the lot next door. Tomorrow I'll call a friend of mine in Denver. He'll put you to work right away. You better change your name, though.
That'll be easy. I'm getting used to it. That's where I met Mary Winslow, in Denver at the Hi-Hat Club. Builder's Gladys Jean. She roomed with me about 2 months, and then she left, just like that, one night when a waiter told her some guy wanted to interview her for a magazine. That's the last I ever saw of her.
That's the end of the story?
That's the end.
And Mary Winslow told you all this?
Well, we were very close friends.
Well, so you were. You expect me to believe that?
It's true, every word of it.
You know something? You ought to be writing stories for the movie.
Well, Mary, it looks as though you've lost, doesn't it? That your one card wasn't enough. The man across the table, the man you're sure is a detective, who has come to take you back to Los Angeles to stand trial for a holdup and murder you had nothing to do with, doesn't believe you, does he? And the jury in Los Angeles won't believe you either. Yes, Mary, it looks as though you've lost, but you're going to play the game to the end anyway. And as the piano player across the floor plays the tune he's played 1,000 times in the last 2 weeks, you quietly watch Fontaine and await his next word.
How long did you say you've been here?
I didn't say. I got here about 5 months ago.
Mike it here?
No.
What a figure. Look, Miss...
Cigarette?
Thanks.
Light?
Thanks again, Miss Porter.
Did you say Miss Porter?
That's what you said your name was, didn't you? That's what the billing says, too, isn't it?
Oh, thanks, Mr. Fontaine. Thanks for believing me.
There's just one thing I'd like to ask you, Miss.
Ask me anything.
Knowing Miss Winslow as well as you do, do you think she might come back to Los Angeles sometime and sort of clear things up?
I think she might. Someday. You see, a girl like Mary Winslow gets to feel kind of soiled after working around in joints like this. She'd probably want to spend a little time maybe out in the desert in the sunshine. Sort of freshening up before anybody she cared about.
Yeah. I guess she would. Well, this was a pretty long trip for nothing, you know. Just one more bum steer. But I'm glad it came. I always figured that confession we found on Joe Clark was a phony.
Clark? Is Joe Clark in jail?
He's dead. The Brooklyn police got him one night about 5 months ago. Funny how they got the tip. A woman called the police one night from a little nightclub, the Golden Lion Club. She hung up before they answered the phone, but the Brooklyn boys decided to investigate anyway. One of them spotted Clark parking the car across the street, and he got trigger happy. How was that?
Joe Clark. Finished.
Well, Miss Porter, if you ever run into Mary Winslow,
I'll tell her all about the Christmas present I got from a swell cop named Fontaine.
I'm not a cop, Miss Porter.
You're not? Then who are you?
I'm a private investigator. Working for a guy named Wilson. Dr. Frank Wilson.
Frank Wilson?
That's right. She's in love with Mary Winslow. Doesn't care where she's been. Just wants her to come back and marry him. Well, so long, Miss Porter, and Happy New Year.
Mr. Fontaine.
Yes?
Do you think you could arrange for me to go back to the States with you?
I guess I could. I was figuring on taking one lady back. Are you going on through to Los Angeles?
Not for a while. I'd kind of like to spend a little time in the country somewhere. But I think maybe before next Christmas. Well, I think I'll find Mary Winslow again.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.